Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to the latest in our series of spoiler specials. This one is for Peep Show, the innovative POV sitcom that allowed us to hear the inner thoughts of its two lead characters, Robert Webb's Jeremy and David Mitchell's Mark. It came to an end this week on Channel 4 after 9 series spread over 12 glorious years. For me, it's one of the great sitcoms of the modern era, and at Empire we decided to mark and jazz its passing by inviting its co-creators and writers Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong into the pod booth for a spoiler-filled look back at the final episode, the final series, and the show as a whole. So, over the next half hour or so, enjoy as they spill on all kinds of things, including the thorny issue that has bested many a great sitcom. How exactly do you end this thing? Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on the Empire podcast by Jesse Armstrong and Jesse Armstrong, or Sam Bain, co-creators and co-writers of Peep Show. How are you, chaps?
Very well, very well.
Yep. Good, good, good. We are recording this before the final episode. The final episode of Peep Show goes out. How do you feel? Are you nervous? Are you relieved to have stuck the landing after all these years?
I feel a mixture of human emotions: happiness, sadness, grief, fear, anxiety, loss, and sort of a weird sort of delirium underpinning all that.
Have you gone through the five stages of the Kubler-Ross model? Yeah. Is that essentially what you've done? Jesse, how do you feel?
I feel anxious, but mainly because I've got some of the people from the show coming over to have some food tonight to watch episode 5 go out. So I'm mainly thinking about recipes and like, will some bottles of wine go in the fridge, or will I have to move an extra seat through from the other room to the other room? So I'm focused on that.
Fantastic. So the more mundane stuff. Yeah. But in terms of the show itself, do you feel relieved now? I mean, how do you feel? Do you feel a sense of loss that this Peep Show will no longer be in your life?
Not yet, because I think you do. There's been this. There's this bit of moment while the show's still going out, still getting reviewed, previewed, and we're still coming in and talking to people like yourselves about the show, and so it all feels pretty alive. And we're seeing David and Robert and Matt and Olivia and everyone from the show more than ever actually at the moment, because we're doing events and all slapping each other on the back in a disgusting self-congratulatory way. So it's, you know, it's Peep Show Central at the moment. I think it'll be in about 5 months' time when I'm banging on the door of Empire going, would you like to do a podcast about me? I used to be involved with the Peep Show. That's when the sense of loss will set in.
I'm sure that won't happen. So let's talk about the final series. When did you decide? And by the way, I have seen the final episode. When did you decide that this was going to be the final series?
I think it was a couple of years ago when we first started thinking about writing it. And it was a mixture of things. I think our reasons for wanting to finish it. I think mainly the feeling like it's going to have to finish at some point, so let's try and go out on a high and make this a really, really good one. And I think after 9 series, you're in a quite unique territory where the main fear is, how can we squeeze more juice out of this lemon? How can we get more stories out of these characters? And it does become increasingly testing. Are we going to have to make Jeremy do that again? And haven't we already done that with Mark? Haven't we already had a whole episode about garlic? I can't remember. Let's look at Wikipedia. So it was just that thing of wanting to do a good final series. And I think it provided a good motivation for us to kind of try and push it to make it as good as we could, really.
Mm. Yeah, no, I think that's dead right. I think we were probably in the midst of loads of other things and thinking about doing it again. And we've always enjoyed it, but it really gave us a massive kick up the arse when we thought, right, let's do a final series, and people, I think, will be a little bit more interested, and we will be definitely anxious to make it really good. And it felt like the incentive we needed to think about a really good series. But it's perverse, because, you know, you build a sitcom to last, ideally, you know, when you're thinking about it, or you should do, probably, I think. And, you know, so there's a bit of us that's, as we've been watching the episodes go out, and we feel pleased with the series, and there's been, on the whole, positive reaction, and you feel a bit like you've bred a one of the few racehorses that actually has four legs and can complete the course, and then you're ushering it away to be shot. And it's like, this is slightly perverse, because sitcoms, the ones that don't work, are more numerous than the ones that do sort of essentially work. So there is there's definitely a minor key of like, fuck, have we really... This is like the most stupid thing ever, because we can, you know, we love writing for David and Robert, and we love those situations. So yeah, there are mixed feelings.
Did you look at other sitcoms in their final series, final seasons, and see how? Because there's some great examples of series finales out there, and then there are some less successful, shall we say. Did you look at previous shows and learn from them what they'd done right, what they'd done wrong?
We didn't specifically. Watch anything, did we? But I think we were aware that we wanted to not change everything, not do a big everything's different series or episode for the final episode. That we just wanted to do a sort of a good, strong series first and foremost.
I think, I mean, you've seen it, so you're better judge than us. I mean, we knew that there'd be a bit of heat on the final episode and people would be intrigued at where we left them. But I think probably some of the best sitcom episodes, final episodes, don't wear it too heavily. I mean, I don't know whether they knew when they were doing Fawlty Towers that would be the last episode, but I think the last one is just like Basil the Rat or something. It's just like a really great episode.
Yeah.
And in a way, thinking that you're trying to tie things up to a show which, by the very nature of a sitcom, isn't probably built to end, can lead you into doing those maybe the slightly more weird sitcoms where they try and tie everything up. And obviously you can see that desire, especially if you have a bit more of an arcy show with some relationships that you've invested in. People want them to be, you know, who's going to end up married to who kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it probably leads you towards a difficult shape. So I think our episode is more of a normal episode.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a sense of occasion in the episode because it's, you know, Jeremy's 40th birthday.
Yes.
And you know, there's not a lot of incident in terms of no one dies, no one's head fall off. It's not quite that.
Classics.
There's a mild kidnap.
What you expect in a final episode.
Precisely.
George Costanza's head fell off.
At least one decapitation in every final episode. But I love where you leave these guys. I love the fact that you leave Mark and Jez tied together. And it feels almost like they're fated to be in this flat in their 50s, in their 60s, in their 70s, a bit like a modern Steptoe and Son in a way. They hate each other, but they can't tear themselves away. Is that where you want it? From the off, when you sat down, do you think we're going to leave them together?
I think that was something we settled on pretty quickly, wasn't it? There was never any real thought of, oh, we'll split them up and they'll be a farewell. I think, as you say, you know, the glory of sitcom is that, you know, it is a trap, and that is kind of the nub of the whole show, is these two guys who don't really belong together. So yeah, that final scene was, we didn't have the dialogue till late on, but we always knew it would be them together.
Yeah, and you know, we talked a bit about should they be a happy ending, there's a question if, you know, obviously their relationship is not a super functional or great one, but on the other hand, that is the sort of the relationship. And I guess would it have been a happy ending if Mark had gone off married to April or someone? Where it would have been, it might have theoretically been happier. I'm not sure if you would have felt happier. So yeah, we knew we wanted them to end up together. Well, I don't know if I think that they'll always be together, but
no.
But yeah, that was, I think that we knew that was where we wanted to leave them.
I guess do you feel if you had given Mark, for example, that stereotypical happy ending, running off with a marriage, that in the back of your mind, the back of the audience's mind, you'd be thinking, he's going to fuck it up at some point. So it's not really happy, is it? Where you leave him is absolutely perfect.
Yeah. And also the weird thing about the show is because it's always been something of a minority show, you know, it's not a massive mega hit. More times than not, we've finished a series, probably overall, not knowing if we would be recommissioned. You know, the channel's always been dead supportive and nice, but there's a lot of new shows around and people trying to look to put their thing on, so it's competitive, you know. And so probably series 1, 2, 3, 4, I can't even remember, 5, we were probably thinking, well, we better leave it, we better sort of tidy our documents at the desk and make sure we've left a relatively clean ending if that is the final episode, because it could easily be.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've written a lot of previous endings in a way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So
just agreement on that, Sam. You haven't got anything, no dissenting view.
No, I'm agreeing with what you just said as well just now. I'm agreeing with the fact that I'm agreeing. Yeah, you pointed it out correctly.
Ascent.
Yeah, that's also a good comment.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Thank you. Should we end on that high point?
Yeah, that's it. Thanks for coming, guys. It's been a delight. So when you sat down to block out the final series, did you have arcs in mind for all the characters? Did you have exits in mind for all the characters?
Well, I think we always focus on Mark and Jeremy, you know, sort of 90% of our thinking is about them, and certainly Jeremy's arc, the sort of gay Jeremy arc was a relatively early idea, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Kind of, basically, we knew you wanted to do something different, because you can't sort of endlessly repeat the same sort of he falls in love with a beautiful woman thing, which we've done seems like 100 times. Mm. And also it felt right for the character because he has had gay tendencies before, and we tried this to Rob and he was very comfortable with it, so we kind of, you know, we talked about it quite a lot, trying to make sure it wasn't wrong and sort of hit a bum note. Mm. But I think that we felt quite excited by that. And with Mark, we wanted to sort of, the first two episodes in a way are sort of preamble for Mark, aren't they? Because they're clearing up the past. Mm. Jeremy in episode one and Dobby in episode two. We kind of wanted to do that because it felt like it would be unfair in a way to kind of like forget what had happened in the previous series, and we felt we needed to address that. But then April was something, which again was a relatively early idea, wasn't it, to bring her back.
Was it? Yeah, I can't remember.
Well, I felt like we were kind of, as Jesse said about the ending, we're kind of keen not to be too self-indulgent, but I think, you know, April is a sort of self-indulgence in a sense because it's referenced back to an episode that happened in Series 2, but also it moves it forward in ways that we hadn't done before. So it felt like maybe a sort of, we could allow ourselves that indulgence in the final series.
Mm. And allowed you to write the dinner party from hell as well, which must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it's eventually fun if you get it's quite hard getting a farcy scene to work really well, so that there's a lot of forehead bleeding before the fun emerges. But yeah, in the end it was, well, it's good. I think it's I wouldn't probably claim any of it was fun, but hopefully the episode is fun.
And in terms of writing episodes, I mean, are you still on set writing voiceover as
not on
as
set
as the series progresses?
Not on set. Okay. We often go and watch mainly for fun and to be around the show and to hang out with Becky Martin, the director, and everyone else. But we write in the edit. That's where we write a lot, with where Becky and Mark Davis, our long-term editor and the sort of team, you know, frequently come back with our least favourite question, which is, could there be anything funnier here? It's, you know, where there's a little, you know, because in the script we would have written voiceover, but in the edit, either it doesn't quite fit what's happening, or it could do with being a bit shorter or a bit longer because of the physical movements around. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it would just be like, oh, well, that seemed like a good joke at the read-through, but is there anything funnier there? To which, you know, it's difficult. It's always a difficult question to say no to. There's nothing funnier than that. We have achieved that. Is every member of the human species will agree that is the funniest possible combination of words for that 3-second hole.
We emailed Larry David, Woody Allen, and they said it was brilliant. So yeah.
So there's a lot of it's only just stopped as we talk now with you today, you know, the edit is, and we're writing right up until when the episodes are locked, changing those voiceovers, it's tough for us writers, just in terms of the amount of time it takes. But it's also one of the things that people, one of the reasons it's also great, because it's an extra limb as a comedy writer that you have to exercise.
It's a fantastic. The concept is astonishing, has been from the off. But in terms of, so when did you last finish? When did you actually last write Peep Show?
Was it a couple
of days ago?
Two, three weeks ago.
Okay.
Yeah, like, and then we were just sort of discussing, you know, the final edit, the final audio mix, and taking out a word here or a word there. But you know, I think it is. I think they wouldn't allow us to change it now. I think it's finally locked in a vault, and they won't let us in to do more tinkering.
So, presuming that the final episode I've seen is the same final episode that's going to go out, it wasn't just swapped in for me. You finish with, you give the last word to Mark. Can you talk about that, with that decision? Because the series began with Jeremy.
Okay.
Way back in the day.
Yeah, that was a conscious decision. There's an algorithm.
I thought so.
No, that's just chance. There's some other words in the first draft.
Yeah.
I can't even remember. I think it might have been Jeremy who that's just we with Mark and Becky's help, we like to be tough on the show in the edit, and we're happy to cut to get to the best stuff. And
and it ends on a voiceover, right?
From Mark. Yes.
So, and the order of the voiceovers, first Jeremy, then Mark, was entirely due to that's how the shots were.
Mm-hmm.
That what we shot was in that order, so we wrote voiceovers after the fact to fit those shots in. That's kind of how we do it sometimes.
Okay. So you haven't felt, for example, over the years that Mark, in many ways, is the show's main protagonist, and he's the one that the change seems to happen to most often. He goes through marriage and divorce and fatherhood, whereas Jeremy, by and large, is, it reminds me a little bit of that great Simpsons episode that ends at the end with Homer saying, "Marge, my dear, I haven't learned a thing." Jeremy, in a way, doesn't change that much.
No, I disagree.
Would you disagree with that?
I disagree. I guess Mark has gone through more life events, in that he's got married and had a, but Jeremy's got married as well, but even if it was only a visa marriage. I think Jeremy has changed more. You know, I think when you met him, he would have said he was going to be a musician for sure.
Mm.
And, you know, he has, to some extent, accepted that that's not going to happen, and that he's become this kind of idiot guru in his own mind, like one of those guys who's like, "Oh, I've seen a lot of life," you know. And I think he's changed more. And no, I think we've always thought of it as a dual lead show, and we've always tried to make sure that they've got as much to do and are as funny as each other. So that's been our aim and aspiration and hope.
I'm agreeing with you. That's a great point.
Thanks, Sam. I'm giving you double thumbs up in the studio.
No rewrites required for that.
So going back to the very, very beginning, the idea came about with Andrew O'Connor as well. So can you talk about how the idea first came to you guys?
Yeah, so Andrew, who we knew as a producer, we developed a couple of things with him. He came to us and he said he'd pitched this idea to Channel 4, which was about sort of two guys talking over TV clips, a bit like Beavis and Butthead, but they had Michelin Webb signed up, who were sort of up-and-coming, hot, but not yet famous, double act. And we knew them quite well because we'd written a show with them which hadn't got made at the BBC. So we were very happy to write for them. And then the question was, what's the other half of the show? Because Channel 4 felt like it wasn't enough just to have clips and talking over the clips. So we came up with a situation which we know as Peep Show. And obviously the POV and the voiceover sort of came out of thinking about how you'd marry the two up, and sort of like, I guess, talking over clips of their life was sort of a vague pitch of how you expand it. Yeah, and then obviously it developed away from the clip thing, so that's sort of gone completely now.
I mean, back in the day...
I agree. Assent.
Back in the day, there was a pilot that as well had Sophie's voiceover. We saw her POV as well. I've never seen that pilot. I don't know whether it's out there.
We did two pilots, and, you know, I think in terms of process, it's great to do pilots, and it's as long as you end up doing a series, it's great to do loads of work before. If you don't, then it can be rather frustrating. But so I think we did two 15-minuters that made a sort of half hour show, and I think that the first half didn't have any other voiceovers. It was just Dave and Rob,
right.
and so we tried in the second part giving voiceovers to other people. There's a version of Jeremy going for an interview scene where the woman interviewing him has a voiceover, and so does Olivia Colman and Sophie in it too, and it was great to try. And then, but I think we realised that the slightly claustrophobic thing, which maybe had worried us, was actually, I don't know if it's a strength, but it's basically that's the show. So, and you know, for good or ill, that's, you know, some people will not find it a conducive world to enter the head of these two people. But I think we discovered that well, that's the show, and let's go for it and try and be in their heads as deeply and as grubbily as is possible.
So when you write the scripts. Do you write the... Obviously, you said you write in the edit as well, but do you write at the time the voiceover? Do you write dialogue and then... Or do you say, insert funny thing, we'll finish in the edit?
No, it's all written. We write it pretending none of it's going to change. You have to get into that weird mindset of, yeah, this is all finished, the script's finished, yay, we can film them, and you sort of have to pretend that you're not going to do 7 more weeks of work the other end writing
I imagine that 60, 70% of the voiceovers, sometimes more, remain, probably.
Yeah.
And certainly the... You know, because often it's sometimes it's just an opportunity to think, maybe I'll masturbate soon. That's the kind of in case of danger, break glass kind of voiceover, whatever the situation is. This podcast is making me feel like masturbating. Is the one? But hopefully they're not mostly not like that. Mostly they should, if not drive plot, be part of the plot. So. Or they can be enjoyable noodlings and a break from the plot, but they should operate in relationship to the plot. So we usually have an idea for what they are.
We give ourselves points for not writing about wanking in voiceovers. It's like we've managed not to write one mentioning wanking. That's have a chocolate bar.
Has it got easier over the years? What, not writing about wanking? Or
no,
just...
it's that thing of you're trying to go. You know, it's that. Oh, cock joke, cock something. What's going to be funny?
You've got 2 seconds. What words can you say that might be funny in 2 seconds? Okay, I know some words which are funny, but I don't want to. I want to try and beat that.
Hitler wanking, something about wanking Hitler or something. Nazis, cocks.
I feel like getting an invaluable insight into the creative process right now.
Also, obviously, you know, it's quite an unusual. Relationship to have with the performers because they are acting what's on the page and they're good actors, and then you know for them to suddenly discover that they're thinking about putting a twirl up both their nostrils can sometimes be a surprise, and they you know we do obviously give them a look at the cut and go, you know, is this going to be all right? Do you mind us saying that in fact you're not thinking about your grandmother but you're thinking about twirls up the nostrils at this point? Because it's an unusual and potentially destructive power to have over somebody to be able to rewrite what they're thinking.
As writers, do you find it incredibly freeing, the inner monologues? Because you can essentially say what most sitcoms would not.
Yeah, it is great. I mean, it's a real sort of... the writing of Peep Show, I think, is quite conspicuous. We're very grateful for the credit we get in the show. I think because it's... Because you hear the voiceovers, you sort of know that there's a kind of a freedom there and a kind of freedom to write whatever you want, which you don't get in any other show. And yeah, it's pretty miraculous power, which I think we'll both be sad to lose when the show finishes, won't we?
It's a good technique for a comedy writer, that's for sure. Miraculous. I'm going to dissent from the description of it as miraculous.
I'm going to agree with your dissent. I think that's a good dissent.
You've never had a day where you've thought, what I've written there, that's pretty miraculous.
Well, no, I have thought, this show is pretty miraculous. This show has been on for 12 years. That's pretty miraculous. People seem to like it. That's even more miraculous. I do have that thought.
And is it completely done now? I mean, we were talking just beforehand, Sam, about how Rocky is coming back and Creed, Star Wars is coming back after 30, 40 years. Do you think maybe 10, 15, 20 years down the line, it'd be interesting to pop in, see where Mark and Jez are?
I do. I don't think it's... you hope that those things feel like backed by popular demand, everyone's happy to see it, not craven kind of disappointing returns to something that's already been done over. I think we've already started a document which is like, oh well, I think I know what would happen to them. So I wouldn't rule it out. If it feels fun and we feel like we know where they would be and it would be amusing, I wouldn't rule out returning to them. Would you, Sam?
No, I'm agreeing with you again.
I agree with you.
20 years' time, how many do you think would be dead? Superhands, he's not going to make it to 2035, is he?
He's juicing. Look at Keith Richards. He's a survivor.
He's fine. He'll be the last to go.
He'll outlive us all.
It'll be, well, from Mark's point of view, at his own funeral. Just, just watching Superhands weeping over his coffin. But it's interesting that you never really felt the pressure to have those characters appear in every single episode. For example, in this series, for example, Sophie only turns up in one episode, Dobby only turns up in one episode. If I recall correctly, even Superhands isn't in every single episode. Which I find is an American model. You would find ways to get every single character
probably
to do something
for contractual reasons,
possibly, yeah.
Apart from anything else, which is one of the freedoms of the British system, and also being a minority show where we've kind of not subject to so much pressure.
I think you have to be quite brutal and say this is the Mark and Jeremy show, and that every episode, every story, in the edit, you often end up cutting out little scenes with peripheral characters or little storylines with supporting characters, because you're always servicing their relationships. The scenes where they're together very rarely get cut. In fact, we've never cut one out completely. I think ever may have trimmed it down, but it's always what's their relationship, and the more we can get them together, the more we can get them driving each other's plots and mixing each other's plots, the better. And in some ways, you should be quite brutal and say the other characters are there to service Mark and Jeremy. Obviously, you want them to be good characters that you'd enjoy watching anyway, but that is, in 24-minute sitcom, you have to be quite brutal about that.
Is there a character Bible? For example, you were both trying to remember whether Jeremy finished university. I mean, do you have... it's revealed in this series, but did you have Superhands' real name? Did you know that all along?
No, I mean, all that stuff we, on the whole, we make up. I mean, I think we're much better on... I think we feel like we know the characters inside out, but details, we don't have it all written down. No.
If it just feels right at the time.
Feels right, do it.
Fair enough. And you've mentioned a little bit about the inspiration for Superhands. Very quickly, I mean, Jez and Mark, where do they come from? I mean, are they as much part of you guys? Are they Dave and Rob? I mean, how do you...
Well, they've got sort of mixed ancestry. I think one of the first things... Well, we started writing versions of these characters when we were in our 20s, didn't we? So early scripts. And so it's informed by the vibe of you've left university, now what? And they obviously, when they were in the first series and they were that sort of age, it felt quite recent. And that sort of lifestyle of, am I going to be a worker drone like Mark, or am I going to be a creative butterfly like Jeremy? And that felt like a very real life drama, which a lot of our friends and us were going through. And also just sort of the way that in that period of life, you had friends sharing flats, and one of them might own the flat and the other one's renting off them, and that's quite a funny situation, that suddenly you've gone from being mates to I'm your landlord. So that felt like a sort of very early sort of just dynamic that we liked.
And in we wrote a show not totally dissimilar to this, first on our own, then another version with Dave and Rob, and the Jeremy character was more entitled and privileged, and he owned the flat in certain versions, right? And with the help of Ian Morris, who was the commissioning editor at Channel 4, we swapped that round, and I think that Jeremy can be annoying, but people will have their own view, but I still find him sympathetic enough. And when he also owned the flat and he had a bit of money in his pocket, he was funny, and he had more freedom of movement on the chessboard of life because he had money. But he could become, I think that was it was a good idea to take that away from him, because he could become a bit insufferable. So it's one of those small but important changes you make to the dynamics of a show.
I love that as Jeremy, who ultimately is responsible for Mark getting fired in this, in this series. Beautiful.
Yeah, that was pleasing when we saw that could marry up nicely in the last episode.
And did you want to give, I mean, you talked a little bit about not really wanting to give characters send-offs because you didn't really want to treat it as a final episode, but you do bring Jeff back. There is a kind of farewell for Johnson as well.
Mm.
Did you want to give each character a moment, something to...
Yeah, we've always loved working with Neil and Patterson in particular, so we're very happy to give them bits. And we did, in the first draft of that script, our last script, there was like a little collection of Jeremy's exes, do you remember, at the 40th? That we kind of cut quite quickly because it was like...
I think that felt like it was over the edge in terms of people will have their own view about how many people you should see and whether it's nice or what's fun or what's self-indulgent. But that, for us, that was when it was like, oh, right, this is turning into a bit of a ticking them off. And while it's fun to see, you know, I think we've worked with loads of brilliant people who would love to have had... Vera Filatova and Sophie Winkleman, if we could have got them possibly to come, Nancy, Rachel Blanchard to come and do it. But in the end, I think you start going, actually, am I writing a list for a party or am I trying to write a TV show? And the TV show probably has to take predominance, otherwise something odd has happened.
Fair enough. So now Peep Show is nearly done for you guys. What are you working on at the moment? Are you working together? Is this partnership going to continue?
Well, that's a good question. What do you think? Do we do some more?
Agreed.
Okay.
we're working. We're thinking of a new comedy.
Yes.
Having our meetings about that.
Yeah.
Together, and we also have solo stuff.
Yes.
Which is worth talking about or not?
I was telling Chris about your thing earlier, which you've talked about,
Border Guards.
Yeah,
I'm waiting. I've written this film for America for Adam McKay and Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. I'll see what happens. It's in the, you know, it's a big machine, and you don't know what will come out the other end, if anything. So we'll see, and a few other things, none of which I think are worth. I'm trying to adapt a book by Michael Ignatieff about his life in Canadian politics.
Who isn't?
I'm going to try and race to market and beat all the other Truman Capote, Ignatieff projects. It's a good story. But yeah, I'm working on that as well.
Fantastic.
I've got a few things which I can't really talk about.
They're all Ignatieff projects.
They're not all Ignatieff projects. They're mostly Ignatieff. No, the reason I can't talk about them is not because they don't exist. That's important. Just because they're just a bit too early and I don't want to kind of bore anyone with the stuff which is just in development. But yeah, we both got plenty on.
Amazing. Was there ever talk about a Peep Show movie?
There was talk, and that's all it was. I think partly because we always felt like, why do a movie when you do a series? Because that's what the show is. And changing a series into a movie is, I think, it's harder than it looks. And the ones that work are quite unusual, like In Between Us or In the Loop or whatever.
You need a reason, don't you? I think that's what we've thought. You know, In the Loop was allied to the thick of it, and it was about a war, and it felt like that. Oh, that's a good subject for a film. And In Between Us, similarly, at a different level, the kind of, well, lads do go off on holiday after the end of their exams, and so it was like really natural, and it's never felt that way for Peep Show, has it?
And also just visually having a close-up of David or Robert's face on an IMAX screen in 70mm feels like, do we need to see that? I mean, I love them both.
I feel I need to see that.
Yeah?
Yeah. You'd have two tickets right here. I'd buy two.
We did some screenings. It looks good. It looks good in
maybe
on the big
right.
screen.
Well, on that bombshell. You never know. Never know. Keep it in one side for the future. Guys, it's been an absolute pleasure. Peep Show, for me, is one of the great British sitcoms. And you stuck the landing with this final series. So I'm delighted to have you both on the show.
Like, you can put the harpoon gun in. Down, Sam. He said the required words.
Agreed. Assent.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so
it's
much.
Fun. Thanks, you. Chris.
That was Sam Bain and Jesse Armstrong there, and that's it for this Farewell to Peep Show special. Hope you enjoyed it. There are more specials on the way, including another spoiler special, this one for Star Wars The Force Awakens. That's going to be up on Monday, the 21st of December. And our Review of the Year podcast, which is up around the 28th, 29th of December. And the regular podcast, if you don't listen to that already, hits every Friday. I've been Chris Hewitt. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.